Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
You are listening to station WGN.
Quiet, please. In exactly 15 seconds, we'll be on the air.
This is exciting, isn't it?
In 5, 4, 3, 2.
Saturday, what a day.
All right, welcome in, everybody. It's Dave Plyer here on this Saturday afternoon on 720 WGN. Glad you could join us. 312-981-7200 is our number. We do have a great show for you planned this afternoon. We'll be talking Oscar history with Ben Mankiewicz. He's the host on Turner Classic Movies. And we'll also talk about his picks for Best Picture and the movie Mank about his famous grandfather. Then we'll talk about the very fact that the film industry was invented right here in Chicago. And historian Adam Seltzer will join us for that conversation. And we'll talk about the seasonal return of Chicagoland's only permanent drive-in theater with Scott Dean. He's the proprietor of the McHenry Outdoor. And later after 6, we'll help you get ready for summer with the doctor's Dr. Ian Smith and his new book, Fast Burn. All right, so tomorrow is the Oscars, where many stars, writers, directors, and other creatives will gather in the hopes of making history. If you love classic movies, then you'll love the Turner Classic Movies Network. Ben Mankiewicz is the host of TCM, and joining us to talk about the history of the Academy Awards, TCM's 31 days of Oscar, and his thoughts for Best Picture this year, plus the movie Mank, nominated for Best Picture, Best Actor, Supporting Actress, and that is my pal Ben Mankiewicz. Ben, finally, happy Oscar weekend to you, my friend.
Yeah, happy strange Oscar weekend to you, too.
It is a little strange, I know. It seems like we've waited quite a bit of time for film's biggest night. And yes, it's going to look a little different this year, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. I mean, everything looks different. But, you know, the Oscars, for those of us who, you know, care about the ceremony and care about the show and care about the movies, you know, this is it's one of those moments where you recognize how strange the year is. When it really hits you. I mean, I always watch the Golden Globes, but we don't mark time by the Golden Globes, right?
But
we do by the Oscars. So this will be another reminder of the word's been beaten to death, but the surreal nature of the last 13 months.
I was going to say, when was the last time you went and saw a new movie to review it, to check it out in a theater? Has it been a while, or has it been more recent, or not at all?
It was 1987. It was Reagan's second to last full year. Yeah, I don't know, man. I don't know when it was. I really don't. I mean,
it's been that long. Yeah,
probably. I think I went. I love going to. You know, sometimes I love movies that come out in January and February because that's like when the first one of the Liam Neeson is a 60-year-old badass. That's when that began. Taken is my recollection, but it was then. And so, and then the other one he had with the January Jones, which I thought was really good too. So I used to go. I love seeing those movies, and I certainly would have seen the Bob Odenkirk movie in a theater. I haven't for that. I know that obviously some theaters are back open. You can do that. So, but it's been January or February of last year, with the crazy exception for me of Mank.
Right.
Which I did see it in a theater because David Fincher screened it for me.
Oh, that's nice.
And me alone.
You know what?
He saw it for CBS Sunday morning. So that was a great experience, but that doesn't count.
That doesn't count. Yeah, but he should have for you. A little history about the Oscars. They were the brainchild, and what a surprise, of a movie studio head. So it was the head of MGM at the time, Louis B. Mayer, all the way back in the 1920s. Wanted to honor his craft.
Yeah, I mean, Louis B. Mayer was a, obviously great businessman, Louis B. Mayer portrayed so unfavorably.
Yes, he has.
It's hard for me to think of any other way. But, of course, it was, this is, Mayer was among those titans who recognized that this wasn't, frivolous art, which, you could never get my grandfather, Herman Mankiewicz, to recognize, and that, it needed to be promoted and celebrated as such. And the Oscars, it turned out, took a while, but it turned out, that the Oscars were such a big part of selling the business of why the movies are important to America and to the world.
And it's funny that, you know, the first one, and I'm a movie buff and I love the history of this thing, is that the first Oscar ceremony, sound had just been introduced. And so, you know, Warner Brothers, you know, the movie The Jazz Singer was one of the first talkies, but I don't believe it was allowed to even compete for Best Picture because they didn't even respect or consider the sound yet.
Yeah, although that happened pretty quick. I mean, it is, it went from, of course, the initial resistance, the same kind of resistance that, you know, that you see in a great picture like Singin' in the Rain, which sort of, you know, celebrates that moment, that transition from silent film to sound. But, you know, all the theaters had to be refitted. And so there was some of the hesitation was the normal resistance that we as humans have to change. And some of it was purely protecting financial interests. Like, are we going to go to all this trouble and spend all this money to do this? Let's make sure. Are we sure? Right? We're going to convert all these theaters. These theaters, they're palaces, right?
That's right.
You know, these aren't multiplexes. This is going to cost a lot of money. And so it took a while to get sound into enough theaters to where it made sense.
And for
a couple of years, in those early years of sound, many movies were released both ways. Like there'd be a sound version and there was also a silent version.
We're going to talk about Ben's picks for this year's Oscars and the movie Mank, based on his grandfather, Herman Mankiewicz, right after this on 720 WGN.
Yeah,
Dave Blyer on 720 WGN. We're talking to TCM's Ben Mankiewicz. Ben, you really obviously never met your grandfather as he passed on 14 years before you were born. You and I are the same age. But you finally got to meet him, so to speak, in the Academy-nominated picture Mank.
Yeah, it was a crazy experience, this notion that of how impactful this movie was for me. You know, people, I've been asked 1,000 times what I think of the movie, and I only have one answer. It's amazing. It's like the greatest movie I've ever seen. You know, it's called Mank.
Right.
Like, I really don't need to go any further than that.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, that's been a nickname for me and a nickname for, you know, almost everybody in my family at one point or another. And so I never met my grandfather, but he is, you know, obviously loomed large, less so as I was a kid, because I grew up in a political family in Washington. My father was in politics, but he spoke very reverentially of his father. He loved him very much, but he died 14 years before I was born. And then when I moved to Los Angeles and then entered this business, sort of Herman Mankiewicz just became a much more important person in my life in my 30s, where I really started thinking about him a lot, reading about him a lot, talking to my dad while my dad was still alive about his father more than I ever had. And I had a very clear image of him. And it was like Gary Oldman walked into that image. It was exactly, to me, as my father had described him. So there's a degree of, you know, I don't have any mixed feelings about the movies, but my emotions were mixed because I just instantly, as I was watching this movie, I think, oh, my God, I can't believe my dad's not here to see this.
Yeah.
Because he would have been, it really would have, it was almost like Fincher had talked to, had gotten a description, Fincher and Oldman had gotten a description of my grandfather from my father, and then Gary Oldman turned that into the character. So it's a very special thing to me. I probably need now, it's been a few months since I've seen it at all, I probably need to go back and watch Mank again and try and separate the rather strong emotions that I have when watching it.
You know, and I was going to say, when you're younger, even in your teens and stuff, because I think your grandmother lived until the mid-1980s, you don't really think about asking those deep questions. You almost want to go back and wish you had, so that you got almost a little bit more firsthand perspective, but at the very least, you got to talk to your father about him.
Yeah, and I, you know, but I still missed the so many. My dad was a big deal in Democratic politics, to such an extent that I'm not trying to sell my father. I just mean that the notion that there was another part of the family that had done something that was a big deal. That had been my awareness of the political wing of the family, which is really just my dad,
right.
Essentially, it so dwarfed the Hollywood part, which is actually much bigger, that I just didn't give much thought to it.
Right.
So I wasn't interested in it.
Right.
It didn't seem like a thing to me. And it took me until embarrassingly late in life to recognize that, oh, you know, I'd probably be spending a little more time. It's a bigger deal than perhaps gave it credit for.
No, that's what I thought about it.
I've been making up for lost time over the last 20, 25 years.
That's excellent. That's excellent. When people say to me about the movie, too, they're like, well, it's about, you know, the guy who wrote Citizen Kane. I'm like, no, it was about a Hollywood writer that, you know, had his struggles. Like, we all have our struggles. This showcased, you know, his struggles back in that day.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I don't think it's very clear what the movie is about. I don't think that's a criticism. It's about a lot of things. But it's certainly not about, it's not about the controversy over who wrote Citizen Kane.
Right.
Since you didn't want to tell that story, you didn't think that story was terribly interesting. I think he was probably right. Yeah, it was a story about, you know, it was both a celebration and a condemnation of Hollywood at the time. And I think you can still celebrate and condemn the movie business today. And obviously I say that as somebody who loves it, right? I mean, I do. I love it. There's a lot of things wrong with it. And talking about the things that are wrong with it is part of what makes it great. And that was certainly true in the 1930s when the, you know, when this movie is set over, you know, three different, you know, I think it's mostly set in 30, 34, and 37 from November, and 39 when 40 when my grandfather's actually writing the film.
I was going to say, the script for Mank was around for a long time. What took so long to get it to the big screen?
Well, I think mostly what causes all movies to take a long time. But David Fincher, I did a piece for PBS Sunday Morning, and that's why I was able to screen the movie in such a luxurious manner, which is, again, another surreal moment. You know, his father, Jack Fincher, who was a journalist, good one, wrote it. He had Jack Fincher loved Hollywood, loved classic Hollywood, loved these movies, loved Citizen Kane. Wrote this screenplay. He was not a screenwriter by trade, and then his son became, you know, one of the sort of bold, innovative, influential director in town. And then his son went about trying to get it made, but it's not easy to get a brilliant piece about a Hollywood writer who nobody knows made. And Fincher made all these other big movies. And then he told me finally he was, you know, done making a show for Netflix, Mindhunter, which was shooting in Pittsburgh, and he wanted to come back to Los Angeles. And they asked him if somebody wanted to do it. He's like, I want to make my dad the screenplay my father wrote. I've been wanting to make it for a long time. And this is one of the great things. You know, you can, there is a way to talk about Netflix and all these streaming services as having the effect of killing movies as we recall them, or damaging movies as we recall them, the idea of going to the theater. But, you know, Netflix gets movies like this made. I think it's pretty good. It exposes us to all this.
It does.
Great, all these great. So Netflix, and, you know, and what's amazing, and shows you David Fincher's worth to a company like Netflix, he says they didn't even, I remember asking him, I go, so here's the deal. You said you'd make this, but they were like, okay, you can make this, but then you have to make, you know, Superman 8 for us.
Oh,
whatever.
Yeah. How it goes? That's always how it goes.
He had, and he goes, no, they said, what do you want to make? And I said, I want to make this. I want to make my father's movie, and I want to shoot it in the black and white. And they were like, okay.
That's great. Lovely. Love that. I love that. How lucky is that?
And they were in, so, yeah.
I love it. Right. I love it. But then you say, you know, oh, who wants to make a movie, a period piece about, well, it's been nominated for Best Motion Picture of the Year. So you got Mank, you got The Father, Judas and the Black Messiah, Minari, Nomadland, Promising Young Woman, Sound of Metal, The Trial of the Chicago 7. And you and I talk every year about what your picks are because you are such a movie fiend. How do you choose this one? I mean, I would assume where you want to go with this, but like, what do you think is going to rise to the top, Ben?
I'm a gambler, and we talk about this every year. And I pay, you know, I think it's hard for me to imagine that Vegas, representing all entities that post odds now, is this wrong. Where basically, if you want to win $100 on Nomadland, you got to bet like $670 to win $100.
Yeah.
That makes it a pretty prohibitive favorite. I would then point out that Buster Douglas beat Mike Tyson at longer odds. So it happens.
That's true. That's true. Absolutely.
So Trial of Chicago 7 is 6-1. Minari is 14-1. Mank is all the way down at 33-1 near the bottom. Sound of Metal and The Father have longer odds. So I guess Nomadland will win. If I can get those odds and I can get the Trial of Chicago 7 at 6-1, I might make that bet. I don't know that, because Nomadland, Nomadland is brilliant and it's wonderful. There's a depressing quality to it, and I have this sense, based on nothing, that that the idea of a movie that is more uplifting has a chance to sneak in this year. So I might put a couple of dollars behind the Trial of Chicago 7.
What about directing? Because David Fincher's nominated for Mank as well.
First of all, Fincher is a hack, and everyone knows it. I would love to see David Fincher win, but I think Chloe Zhao's probably that one. I think probably goes to her. So for Nomadland, and it's obviously very rare then that I would, you know, I'm picking the director and the movie no match. That doesn't usually happen. This strikes me as a year where it could, but certainly if Nomadland wins, then she wins also. There's no question.
Gotcha.
And obviously she's deserved, but you know, I mean, everybody, they're all nominated. They all deserve it. You know, there's a
actor, actress. Let's go with the actor in a leading role.
Chadwick Boseman's going to win the odds on Chadwick. I'm giving you Chadwick Boseman. Yeah. So you have to bet. So I have to bet $670 to win $100 on Nomadland. You have to bet $1,667 to win $100 for Chadwick Boseman.
I know that. That's how we're gauging things now. It's all based on Vegas. Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. And he should win. I mean, it's okay. It's all right. That's a tragedy that stunned people as he kept his illness secret, and you see there, you know, and role after role, you see the greatness in him. So for him to get honored posthumously is a damn thing wrong with that. Obviously, you know, I mean, Anthony Hopkins is amazing. Riz Ahmed was anybody could. I'd love, obviously, of course, I would. I mean, I hope. The old man wins.
I would think
overwhelmingly biased, but I'll get caught up in the moment when Chadwick Boseman wins, and I am pleased that forever going forward he will be Oscar winner Chadwick Boseman. Yep. That's appropriate.
Absolutely. Performance by an actress in a leading role: Viola Davis, Andra Day, Vanessa Kirby, Frances McDormand, Carey Mulligan.
Well, this one's competitive. Carey Mulligan's a favorite, but a super slight favorite to Viola Davis, and Frances McDormand right behind that, and Andra Day right behind that, and Vanessa Kirby really the only one who has long odds. So any of those first four could win. I'm going to guess on the favorite and say that Carey Mulligan wins. But again, if Nomadland swept this, with Frances McDormand winning and movie and best director, wouldn't surprise me, but I'm going to go with Carey Mulligan. And you know, like Meryl Streep, you know, Viola Davis sort of, I think of as a modern day Meryl Streep. Like,
sure.
At some point, you're going to get to the point where, like, hey man, you realize Meryl Streep has lost whatever it is, like 18 times? Like, that's insane. Like, you can make an argument that Viola Davis, yeah, she should win every year.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Viola Davis is the best actress. This year should be the best actress. Next year should be the best actress. The year after that, I don't know why we keep having this award. It's just given every year to Viola Davis, or call the best actress the second best performance of the year.
Right.
We're going to concede.
Well, you mentioned.
So, you know,
go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, go ahead. Yeah.
Well, I would say Meryl Streep. You know, you talk about her. Everyone thinks she's the big Oscar winner. She had 21 total nominations, I think, but it was Katharine Hepburn that has the most Oscars, I believe.
Katharine Hepburn has four Best Actress Oscars. Yeah, Meryl Streep has two Best Actress Oscars. One of hers is her supporting voice. But Meryl Streep is the biggest Oscar loser. I mean, Jesus, what an embarrassment for Meryl Streep!
Yeah, just an embarrassment.
18 times. Who loses 18 times?
That's a tough one.
Like Susan Lucci. No, it's so. That is evidence of why the Oscars and why our obsession with winning and losing is so silly. You know, yeah, if you're great, you're going to lose a lot because you're going to get there and you're competing against, four other incredibly deserving performers, right? Plus all the ones who, you know, who
didn't make
who
it.
Weren't nominated, right?
Right.
Just because you finished sixth in the nomination doesn't mean you didn't deliver a great performance.
And, of course, 31 Days of Oscars happening in the midst of it right now on TCM. And for more on Ben and TCM, visit TCM.com. Always a pleasure, Ben.
All right, thanks.
Thank you, sir. All right, news is next on 720 WGN.